WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by ZipRecruiter.
I'm Christopher Cruz. The Texas House of Representatives has voted to find and arrest Democratic legislators who hightailed it out of the state.
Being 85 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails.
It's now official. At least 51 State House Democrats who fled Texas Sunday for Illinois and New York State broke quorum, stopping Monday's vote on the newly redrawn Texas congressional map. It's designed to flip 5 more seats to the Republicans in the 2026 midterm election. And according to Texas House Speaker Dustin Burroughs, they're now wanted.
The sergeant-at-arms and any officers appointed by her are directed to send for all absentees under warrant of arrest.
To kill the bill, they'll have to hold out through August 19th. Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
Republican Governor Greg Abbott has given the legislators less than 24 hours to return home before he begins to remove them from office. New York Governor Kathy Hochul is hosting several of the Texas legislators in her state. She had a message for Republicans in Texas.
This is a war. We are at war. And that's why the gloves are off. And I say, bring it on.
President Trump has been pressuring Russia to end its invasion of Ukraine by threatening any country that buys oil from Russia with extra tariffs. Today, he followed through on his threat, as CBS's Weijia Zhang tells us from the White House.
The president said that India is not only buying massive amounts of oil from Russia, they are then for much of the oil purchased, he says, selling it on the open market for big profits. They don't care how many people in Ukraine are being killed by the Russian war machine. Because of this, I will be substantially raising the tariff paid to India to the USA.
A man from Arkansas who shot and killed 4 people at a grocery store in 2024 has been sentenced to life in prison without parole. Travis Posey pleaded guilty last month to the shooting. Prosecutors have not identified a motive for that shooting. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem tells CBS News the ICE detention facility known as Alligator Alcatraz could be the model for other detention centers across the country. CBS's Nicole Skanga was on an overseas trip with Noem.
Secretary Noem told me they're already considering facilities in Nebraska, in Louisiana, and in Arizona.
The federal judge who presided over the trial of Sean Diddy Combs has denied the rap mogul's renewed bail request. So Combs will remain in jail in New York City until his sentencing on his conviction on prostitution-related charges in October. Combs has been behind bars since his arrest in September. On Wall Street, the Dow closed up more than 1.25%. This is CBS News.
Are you looking to hire? ZipRecruiter finds the best candidate for your job fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Brewers head to Atlanta. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball tonight, the Brewers open a series against the Braves. Milwaukee beating the Nationals yesterday 14-3 to complete a 3-game sweep. Manager Pat Murphy says adding new talent like infielders Anthony Ziegler, Caleb Durbin, or trading for Brandon Lockridge is keeping them competitive.
You look at Lockridge and Ziegler, and they don't have very many Major League ABs, so once again, I go back to their hunger. They want to impress. They want to be here. And then Durbin's been on the bench a couple days, so he's like, wait a minute, and that matters. You know, Ortiz finding himself. So all that is collectively a healthy situation when you have young, hungry players.
NFL, the Packers taking a day off from practice. Then they get ready to host the New York Jets Saturday night. Overall, Matt LaFleur pleased with the work they got done on family night.
I think everybody's juices are flowing to get to our preseason games and get the Jets here next week.
That's the Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Still lots of time for summer fun in Wisconsin as the state fair is in full swing. There are lots of good music options, especially if you like a trip down memory lane. Some of the acts include Boyz II Men, Darius Rucker, that's Hootie without the blowfish, Queensryche, Great White, and Quiet Riot, that's a trio that will blow the roof off the joint, even at an outdoor venue. Party safely, folks. Actress Lonnie Anderson has passed away. Anderson played Secretary Jennifer Marlowe on the show WKRP in Cincinnati, which ran from 1978 to 1982. Anderson had had built up a decent resume doing guest starring roles before getting the chance to audition. At first, she turned down the role, saying she didn't want to be a stereotypical blonde. The producers took her notes and made her the secretary that doesn't get coffee, doesn't take dictation, and is the smartest person in the room. She was nominated for an Emmy twice for the role. Lonnie Anderson was 79 years old. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Areas of smoke tonight, otherwise a partly cloudy sky and a low in the mid-60s. Hazy sunshine again for tomorrow from areas of smoke and a high within a degree or two of 80. More sunshine Wednesday, highs low 80s. Right now it's 73.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome photographer and musician Chris Rogowski. And Madison film critic Rob Thomas talks about the box office and upcoming movies. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, he need cut a deep end.
Because all the hippies are trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. A kudigi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues and human issues are Native issues. Hey, I want to really thank our guest, Rachel Dion Thunder, for coming on. And she is with the Indigenous Protectors Movement, and really always great to have you on. You've been, you've been on the show maybe the last 5 years. It's just great to see you.
Yeah, I think it has been about 5 years, Robert. Thanks for having me on. I'm a little bit tired, just full transparency. I was on, took the interns out from IPM today to the Needy Walk that IPTF and Sharon Day do every year, and so we were out walking and running today for the water, but it was beautiful. It was really nice to be out there.
Wow. That's awesome. And that's another big Pini Gigi. Thank you for coming on, for being tired. You're always a great guest. And we, you know, and I would really love if you could tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and Indigenous Protectors Movement.
Sure. You know, where do I start? So my name is Rachel Tonse. I am Big Stone Cree Nation, Plains Cree, Nihio, Nihiwak, Treaty 8. Currently live here in South Minneapolis, American Indian Movement, second generation, and, you know, one of the co-founders and now vice president of the Indigenous Protector Movement. And so the Indigenous Protector Movement is a Indigenous-based org here in South Minneapolis that myself, my husband, Benny Dion, Crow Belcourt, Jolene Jones, and Nick Estes started back in 2023. So we're pretty new. You know, and what we really saw was this niche in community that wasn't being met. And when I talk about this niche, I mean this in like resources for Indigenous activism, right? And so like traditionally in the past, there were entities here that were functioning at a high capacity, like the American Indian Movement. And, you know, things have just dwindled down over time. And we saw this need to, you know, start something new and fresh while also honoring, you know, the past and the history and all the sacrifices and also carrying that name on. And so that's why we started IPM. And, you know, we've been pretty busy since the jump. You know, I think that a lot of the listeners probably know about Mini Shields. That's one of our programs that we do sponsor here in South Minneapolis. And so those are That's all Native Indigenous men, you know, finding a traditional role and purpose in a modern setting, and, you know, helping protect and keep our community safe, and also growing and healing as men. You know, I was listening to one of the commercials as we were coming on, and it made me think about, you know, the work that we need to do in healing each other, you know, holding each other accountable. And so that's like that brotherhood that started with Many Shields. And then we have kind of like the sister program called the Women's Warrior Society, that we also run, and we meet every other Tuesday. We're actually going to have a meeting tomorrow night where we're going to be planning a smudge walk coming up. And so just invite all of our Native Indigenous sisters to come join us. It's from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Minneapolis American Indian Center. And so we're going to have that tomorrow night. We serve food and just spend time together, you know, and plan. Sometimes we do self-defense classes. We've done Narcan trainings. We have a CPR training coming up. And so the thinking is, you know, to empower our women in community to not only to protect themselves, but to protect their children, their families, and if they need to, their community. And we want to empower them in order to do that, you know, to feel safer, to feel stronger, to have that sisterhood built here in South Minneapolis. You know, a lot of natives come here from like reservations, and they're looking for community. And that's a big part of what we do at IPM is community building. You know, building our community stronger, because we are an action and advocacy based organization. But if our community is not strong and healed, how can we expect our people to respond when these issues pop up? Right.
Yeah. Wow. Exactly.
So we have to focus on healing this multi-generational trauma, and we need to shift that mindset to multi-generational healing. We need our people to be sober. We can't just expect to continue to survive. We need to shift into a thriving mindset.
It's amazing what you mentioned too. I heard through Minneapolis Public Schools that there's over 150 different tribes recognized here in Minneapolis specifically, and also 75,000 Native Americans in the Twin City area, making it the biggest urban Native community in the country. People looking for what you say and finding it in, you know, with Indigenous Protectors Movement and also the other groups. I see what you're doing, and people see what you're doing, and I love to be able to be on with you and amplify your great work, even if you are a little tired. Oh, wow.
that's why I still came on, you know, because we can't just do the work. We have to also share what we're doing, right? Like, as Native people, we're taught to be humble, right? Like, be humble, you know, be humble in what you're doing. And like, we need to keep that tradition, but we also need to like be more comfortable in using our voices, you know, use your voice, speak it out, you know, into the universe, like what you're doing or what you want, you know, like you're setting that intention, and like, how are people going to know what we're doing or what they can attend or what they can go to or how they can plug in if we're not speaking it out except for our inner circle. So that's something I really advocate for.
Well, and I see on your post from your site and your personal posts on social media that it's a groundswelling. There is quite a few people that are doing, you know, the Women's Warrior Society and Many Shields. And to me, being an old person, that's really exciting to see, you know, these kind of actions come back. Like you said earlier, you know, just last week, it was 1968 when American Indian Movement started in Minneapolis. And we love talking about that. But also now with Indigenous Protectors Movement stepping in, there's hope and there's a voice, and I appreciate what you and your husband and all the members are doing.
Yeah. You know, and there's so many people, because you're right. Cause it's not just me, and it's not just my husband. Like, there are countless people out here every day, you know, that go unnoticed, that are putting that work in. And that is really what it is to be American Indian Movement. American Indian Movement is a spirit, it's a way of life, it's a way of being. And even before it was officially founded in 1968, the American Indian movement existed. You know, Sitting Bull was American Indian movement. You know, all of our ancestors were American Indian movement. American Indian movement has existed since the beginning of colonization. It's how you choose to live your day-to-day life. It's what are you doing to better yourself, better your family, better your people, you know, to bring us into those better days, to heal our people and to ground yourself in that traditional spiritual way. And, you know, American Indian movement did a beautiful thing. It made it really cool to be Indian again, right? Like, yeah. it was like everybody wanted to be Indian and was proud to be Indian and proud of our ways. And they did a lot of beautiful work. And now, you know, we're in a new day. It's a new time, some similar issues, but, you know, we're up against some stuff that I don't think our ancestors ever dreamed of. And we got to all come together. We got to heal. We got to get sober. We got to support each other, you know, to get through this.
Right on. Hey, we're here with Rachel Dion Thunder, Indigenous Vice President and co-founder of Indigenous Protectors Movement here in the Twin Cities and nationally. And we're going to take a quick break. This is Native Roots Radio. Hey, it's Robert Pilot from Native Roots Radio. The Minnesota State Fair is packed with 12 days of fun with food, rides, animal shows, and much, much more. And right in the middle of it all, you'll find Indigenous voices making an impact. Seat the Common Table for lessons in Indigenous food justice. Visit with Native authors and watch drum groups. Plus, stop by the Native Roots Trading Post back at the West End Market. Tickets are just $17 through August 20th at mnstatefair.org.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Well, here we are again, and I gotta tell you, Jim, this match has me really concerned.
Here we have a powerful heavyweight, a train, weighing in at 6,000 tons. And this hasty lightweight challenger, a car, at just 1.5 tons.
This does not bode well for the car, or the people in it.
It's no contest. Every day, people are injured or killed trying to beat a train at rail crossings. See tracks, think train.
Four Sisters Farmers Market is more than a place to shop for delicious organic food. It's a celebration of Indigenous culture, food sovereignty, and community. Now in its 11th season, the market offers healthy, affordable, culturally appropriate local foods every Thursday from 11 to 3. Located on the American Indian Cultural Corridor off Franklin Avenue, Four Sisters Farmers Market is a project of NAGD. Every Thursday now through October, discover more about Four Sisters Farmers Market by visiting NAGD.org.
Oh, this is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka, hecha, wecha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here with Rachel Dion Thunder, Indigenous Protectors Movement, and we're kind of talking about the history. And I'd like to get into the nuts and bolts of what you guys do. I know I see you on you know, the Woman Warrior Society and many shields doing work in the community. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Right. So, you know, we talked a little bit about that. So at IPM, and I really want to say that here in Minneapolis, this is a very unique setting, right? This is like a blessing with how many Native and Indigenous organizations and businesses there are here. There's not anywhere like this that is so centralized in the rest of the country, in an urban setting. And so as IPM, you know, a big part of what we do is the community building, right? Like is creating those traditional, or recreating those traditional roles and purposes for our people, because a lot of our people have lost their purpose. They don't know what their role is. They don't know how to fit into this modern world that, you know, that we're being forced to live into, like live now. And so how do we create those traditional roles and purposes, but through a modern lens, right? So like, that's like with Mini Shields, is creating like that warrior society, like for our men to be a part of, right? That is a big part of what we do, is community building. And then, you know, of course, like we do focus on advocacy and Indigenous issues, and there's so many right now. There's, you know, everything that is happening with ICE and the deportation, you know, and the backlash of like what happens to you if you stand up and you protest against it. And then there's the issues of, you know, our unhoused, our relatives that are currently, you know, without housing, without resources, our relatives that are in active addiction. How do we heal that? We're losing an entire generation to overdoses and fentanyl. How do we stop that? You know, and then you talk about community safety. When AIM Patrol was a thing, AIM Patrol was never having to go up against fully automatic guns with switches and drums on them. So how do we as a people, how do we, you know, they say like, you know, who keeps us safe? We keep us safe. Well, how do we keep us safe when you're going up against something like that? How do we as a community go up against something like that? How do we stop these drug dealers from coming into community? And so, you know, when you hear advocacy or you hear protesting or you hear rallying, like, yes, there's like these obvious issues of like current administration and ICE, but there's also these issues that are so complex. It's like, how do we as a community, as a people, stand together and stop it? And that takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of strategy. It takes a lot of tough conversations. It takes a lot of healing, Robert. You know, I think that this is a trend I've noticed, like in the activism community, is, you know, a lot of activists will point fingers at other activists and say, well, what are you doing about this? And what are you doing about that? And we need to remove that mindset, because not everybody can do something about every single thing. We need to be very strategic. We need to say, you know, well, this person is gifted in speaking, so they're, you know, they're going to be the spokesperson. This person is gifted in writing, you know, in grant writing, and so they're going to write our grants, so we make sure we have resources to do these programs. And so we can't just expect every single person to be out boots on the ground. Everybody has their gifts and their strengths that are given to them from Creator. And we need to be strategic about that. And we need to be positive about that. We need to shift from these unhealed, toxic, negative mindsets. We need to support our youth and these younger generations and younger leaders coming up. There's a lot of gatekeeping that happens. And so all of these things like need to be addressed. They need to be addressed like within community, without the finger pointing. Because when the finger pointing happens and the blaming happens, there's no real positive solution that comes out of that. And so at IPM, we really try to center ourselves around people, around our elders, around individuals, organizations that have that positive mindset, that are solution driven, that have a vision for the future, that they're making, you know, tangible steps towards. And then how do we as IPM do our piece to fit into that, whether it's the community building, whether it's advocacy, whether it's a protest or a march or a ceremony, you know, how can we fit into that piece?
You know, that's I really appreciate you bringing that up. And we tiptoe sometimes around what we call, people, like you said, gatekeeping and being negative towards each other. And we need to call that out in a good way and be a good example. Mm-hmm. I just ignore it because you can't butter the right side of the bread for a lot of people. And a lot of them aren't doing anything. Your boots on the ground, your husband's boots on the ground. And those people aren't healed. So if I look at it in that way, I can move forward and keep on doing what I'm doing, whether it's the radio show or whether it is going boots on the ground. And so,
and that's your part, Robert. You know, I mean, like, look at all of this news and information that you spread across the world, across Indian country, just from doing this show. You know what I mean? Like, then that's just one piece of what you do. And then, you know, all the work you've done with youth and kids over the years, like, everybody has their part. And I think it's also important to remember that, like, we do need to hold each other accountable, you know, but we need to do it in a way that, you know, like, don't make a Facebook post about the person. Sit down, you know, give tobacco. Like, if you need somebody to help you with something, offer them tobacco, you know. You need to honor those ways and set that intention, like that positive energy in our interactions. And I think that we just get caught up in emotions, and because these are, like, very tense issues. These are issues that our people are dying, and, you know, it's serious. It's very serious things. And so we get caught up in that, and then we forget to do, you know, our relational conversations, you know, and that's part of our power, is our connection to each other. You know, and if people want to have a toxic mindset, you know, or, you know, they are not open to healing, that's on them. You know what I mean? Like, we can't take that personally. We just have to continue to move on and do better, so our next generations have a better mindset. We need to set that example.
Well, I know you do, and I know your husband does, and I know your family does, and it is the next generation. You have a little one, and you have stepkids, and I have grandkids, and it's not about us anymore, is it? It's about the future generations, as our elders talked about, the next seven generations.
Mm-hmm. You know, and some of these issues, like, you know, we talk about, like, sobriety, you know, the drug and alcohol epidemic, the fentanyl epidemic, and people are, like, overwhelmed. They're like, how are we going to stop something like that? But I would say that anything is possible. You know, we can't forget that, like, when we come together as Indigenous people and we come together in a good way, we come together in prayer with good intention, with good hearts, good minds, and we really do the work. We do the damn work, Robert. Like, nothing is impossible. And I mean, Leonard Peltier being free after nearly 50 years of incarceration is a testament to that.
Yes.
You know, like, you never give up. You can never give up. You can never get, don't ever give up on yourself. Don't ever give up on your family, your children, and do not ever give up on your people, because nothing is ever a lost cause.
Well, you know, Rachel, great words as always. I want to just talk a little bit, because I know you're a little tired, and we're going to have Dr. Stately on next, but I wanted to bring up that some of the work you're doing with the youth, and one of it is a podcast over at KFGI. I was really happy to be able to see that go on and have a few of them on as guests at KFAI when I was on, and maybe you have a little update, and this is just another leg of your work.
Sure. So so this year at IPM, we took on two interns from Indigenous Peoples Task Force through their intern program. And the whole focus of their internship with IPM is to produce and film and publish a podcast for IPM. And so the interns have named it Sage in the City. And each episode is going to focus on an issue that is present here in community, but also is, like, present across Indian country. And so they're going to look at, you know, how that issue is being addressed here locally within this community, and then also nationally. And so they just finished filming their very first intro episode. Stay tuned. It'll be coming soon on, you know, all of the different platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Facebook, YouTube. We're really excited about that. It's called Sage in the City.
I like that name better than Native Roots Radio, darn it.
They came up with it. All credit to our youth.
No doubt. Well, a big peeny geegee, if anyone wants to donate or find out more about your organization, Indigenous Protectors Movement, is there a place where we can land?
Yeah, for sure. So we're on Facebook, Indigenous Protector Movement. We're on Instagram, Indigenous Protector Movement. On Facebook, there's a link, like a button right there. You can donate. We also have a website, indigenousprotectormovement.com. It has all of our...
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow. CBS News Brief. Most Texas Democratic state legislators have fled the state to prevent the redrawing of congressional districts to favor Republicans. CBS's Ed O'Keefe is in Illinois, where many of them are now staying.
The Democrats say they're going to be here for at least 2 more weeks.
Smoke from wildfires in Canada has been drifting into the upper Midwest and the Northeast. Here's CBS News Philadelphia meteorologist Grant Gilmore.
The worst of the air quality, not just in the United States, but in the world, is right in Detroit, but still some reduced air quality across the Northeast today as we track some of that smoke being pulled to the south and to the east.
Days after a bartender and 3 customers were shot and killed in a bar in western Montana, the suspected shooter remains on the loose. Jim Van Fossen lives in the small town of Anaconda, where the shooting happened.
It's an uneasy feeling knowing that there's someone out there that has the capacity to do this, and we don't know where they are.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Brewers head to Atlanta. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball Tonight. The Brewers open a series against the Braves. Milwaukee beating the Nationals yesterday 14-3 to complete a 3-game sweep. Manager Pat Murphy says adding new talent like infielders Anthony Ziegler, Caleb Durbin, or trading for Brandon Lockridge is keeping them competitive.
You look at Lockridge and Ziegler, and they don't have very many Major League ABs. So once again, I go back to their hunger. They want to impress. They want to be here. And then Durbin's been on the bench a couple days, so he's like, wait a minute. And that matters. You know, Ortiz finding himself. So all that is collectively healthy situation when you have young, hungry players.
NFL, the Packers taking a day off from practice. Then they get ready to host the New York Jets Saturday night. Overall, Matt LaFleur pleased with the work they got done on family night.
I think everybody's juices are flowing to get to our preseason games and get the Jets here next week.
That's the Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Fantastic Four, The First Steps, was tops at the box office this past weekend, despite a bigger attendance dip than prognosticators initially thought. The film opened strong with $117 million last weekend, but dropped off by almost 70% to pull in only $40 million this past weekend. According to Variety, that is a sign the film has not connected with audiences beyond superhero fans. The film is sitting at $198 million domestically and cost $200 million to make. Coming in second place was The Bad Guys 2, which brought in just under $23 million, matching the original film's take on opening weekend in 2022. Audience scores were through the roof, which could mean the film will be in theaters for a while. Landing in third place with $17 million at the gate was the highly anticipated The Naked Gun. The film pulled in another $12 million overseas. Audience scores for this comedy are also strong. Superman and Jurassic World Rebirth rounded out the top five. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Areas of smoke tonight, otherwise a partly cloudy sky and a low in the mid-60s. Hazy sunshine again for tomorrow from areas of smoke and a high within a degree or two of 80. More sunshine Wednesday, highs low 80s. Right now it's 73.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Frank Anderson, who is the founder of Wisconsinology.com. You were great in the documentary. That's really exciting.
I'm really not as a documentary filmmaker because I get bored so quick. You have to really dig into your subject, and you got to show up every day, sometimes for years.
Yeah.
To let a story unfold or to find a story. I'm good for one day.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we'll discuss the Trump tariffs. They're off, they're on, they're up, they're down. But what does it mean to us in Wisconsin? We'll be joined by Wisconsin business owner Kyle LaFond on that and also PBS.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Anin. I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hey, we are here with our friend, Dr. Stately. And Dr. Stately is, and I wrote this down so I get it right, CEO of Native American Community Clinic. Welcome, Dr. Stately. Hey, always great to see you. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for not confusing me with Robert Pilot. I mean, Robert, the other Robert.
Robert Blake. No, wait.
No, the other Robert.
Wait, Lilligren. Oh, yeah.
Lilligren, yeah. Yeah,
right. Well, believe you me, it works Nasty. Both ways. And when we were doing started doing 5 days a week, it was touch and go there for me there on Clinic and Development Institute. Yeah. Hey, Dr. Stately, I just got to mention this. We just had Rachel Dion Thunder on Indigenous Protectors Movement. And my goodness, the future looks bright when we talk to leaders like that.
Yeah, no, it's really wonderful. You know what makes me so? I spent my morning doing a bunch of other things, but I also spent most of my day in a meeting with several folks from several different organizations across the Twin Cities here, but specifically a couple of them that, like us, work in the cultural corridor here. And you know, we're part of this group called the Birthing Justice Collaborative, right, or collective, and we are working specifically on and the initiative to create the American Indian Birthing Center in the Twin Cities. Wow. Right. And I didn't know this at the time that we were starting that process, but apparently there is not another Native American Indian owned and operated birthing center in the United States, the contiguous United States. And that we would be the first one. So the effort and the work that goes into developing this thing as part of our collaborative is really challenging. Right. Of course, it's hard to do something when there's not a model for it already. But just sitting in that space today with people and spending time talking about all of the different things that all of our partnering organizations do already in this space and all the things that we have, ideas we have for advancing maternal and child health through this birthing center. And it just was like I had this moment where I was like, looked around the room and I was like, this must be what it felt like to be some of our elders from the generation before me, like my mom, mm-hmm. Clyde, all these folks that sort of like helped create a few things, right? Sat around and talked about the issues in our community and the challenges that we had around, health disparities, mortality, all the things that, all the violence and all these other things that they were confronted with. It's many of the same things that we are still struggling with at different times here in the Twin Cities now, right? Mm-hmm. But I was like, at the end of the meeting, I was like, this is what it must have been. It felt like where we were like spending time ideating and mm-hmm. talking about all of the things that we had and talking about the answers we already had in our own community.
Wow.
And how we would go to legislature and how we go to these philanthropy and we go to these places to ask for the support to let us just do the work that we already know how to do. So it's like just a really beautiful day for me. I was like, wow. And so when I see Rachel, I see her husband, Vinny, and a bunch of other young people in our community doing amazing things. I just feel really inspired. I was like, this is we're doing the work that the generation before us did. And the generation before them did, this work that we're carrying forward. And our responsibility is to do this work in the best way we possibly can and then hand it off to the next generation.
Right.
So that in two or three or four generations, it's still there. It's bigger or even brighter or better. And then that's the work that we have to do as Native people in our communities is to hold that work and carry the work forward from one generation to the next, pass it on. Give it legs, support it, support the young people doing it. And then I'm really proud and happy of for Rachel and all of those folks who are stepping into those spaces. And you know, I'm closer to the end of my career than I am at the beginning, and she's starting, and I'm really proud that she's doing that work. So pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. I remember Madonna, Thunderhawk. There was a lull in the time where activism was really happening, and then Standing Rock hit, and it really built her up again. I mean, she's in her 80s now, and she's been involved with everything, but she was like, for a while there, where is everybody? And now, you know, that they talked about the seven fires, and I really believe that, and I've seen it, and I've experienced it myself personally from Standing Rock, that all these good things are happening, and our youth are, you know, I just have nothing but positive feelings too, Dr. Stately.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, when I'm in those spaces and I'm having conversations with those young people who are really, you know, stepping into those difficult moments and those spaces and, you know, navigating that space with, you know, leadership, even if they've never done it before, then they're like asking elders for advice, and they're like, you know, taking that advice, and they're sort of like working strategically to do those things. It makes me feel hopeful, you know. Makes me feel hopeful. There was like a few moments over the last few years where I didn't feel all that hopeful. But
right. And I think that's what Madonna was talking about too. And now we see it, you know, the language, and, you know, we talked about a lot with, you know, we had the boarding school issues, and they were trying to get rid of us, and some of the way to deal with that would be to just, I don't want to say be colonized, but fit in, and not for the protection of your children. And I think now this generation's really popped up in the last two generations, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot to be said for, like, you know, that strategy for surviving, right?
Yeah.
I remember one of my most difficult conversations with my mother when I was young, was a conversation I had with her when I was upset with her. I was angry with her. We were having some challenging times and, you know, in my teenage years at 16, 17, 18 kind of a thing. And I was mad and I was pissed about something. And, you know, and one of the things our fight was about, she sent me and my older siblings to boarding school when I was 5 years old. And, you know, I asked her, like, you know, why did you do that? Why did you make that decision? Did you know? And I think I was mad at her, and, you know, she had a few drinks and we were arguing, and I said, you know, did you know what those people did to me there? And, you know, and she had a moment where she was crying, and we had that thing, and I'll never forget the impact of that conversation on me. She was like, she goes, well, I didn't have a choice. You know, I was going to, child protection was going to take you all away from me. And I knew that, and this is 1965 or 66. So, you know, what she knew is that, like, families that were taken away from their parents, they were put into, you know, dispersed and put in different homes. And those families never saw, a lot of them never saw their children again, or their siblings again, right?
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, I remember when she said that, it was like a pile of bricks fell on top of me, where I was like, oh gosh, you know, I'm being a little bit of a a-hole here and attacking her. You know, those conversations I would have with her, like, why didn't you teach us their language? Why didn't you teach us these things, right? And she was like, well, you know, my parents, my grandparents encouraged us not to do that, right? And that was the legacy of those generations of boarding school survivors and attendees that went before me, my mom, my grandparents, my great-grandparents.
Yeah.
We were encouraged not to do it. So
it's interesting with my family, which was a large family. My gaga, my grandma, took one of her sons, my uncles, my daga, everywhere she went when it came to powwows and all that, but just one out of the 11. He isn't a gatekeeper, but he has knowledge whenever I want to know anything about the family or so there. Mm-hmm. She did do that.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things that I remember my mom having really like intentional conversations with us about like, you know, you take care of each other. You and your siblings are the only thing you have is each other, like this. You know, so that relationship, those relationships are like the most important ones to protect. And I just remember like, you know, those conversations from a very young age. And those are still conversations that stay in my head. I have these conversations now with my own sons. You know, they have their little bloody mm-hmm. wars that they have sometimes where they get upset with each other. Like, you know, you know, who pulls more girls from, you know, whatever social they're on or whatever. And they start having little wars about it. And I'm like, hey, like, you can't fight with each other about this. Like, you're all the other person has, really. If I was gone tomorrow, you'd be this guy would be your only and deepest and longest friend and confidant that you would have in your life.
Right.
You have to treasure that relationship.
Amazing.
Not saying you can't be mad at him. Like, you just can't like hit each other or punch each other or, you know, talk disparagingly about each other. It's just not, you know, not something we do.
Yeah. And it's interesting. We have to teach our young ones, and it's really gotten in my face right now because I have a grandson and a granddaughter that are
twins,
1 year old now, and you think about things like that, you know.
My son's turned 18 a couple months ago, and you know, I just think about like where I was when I was their age, and I look around and I think about all of the things that weren't here when I was 18.
Yeah.
That are now, and all of the things that our generation, the generation before us, and the generation before us, before that generation, built for their beneficence, right? And,
yeah.
And I talk to them about that. I'm like, you have a responsibility to continue this for your children and grandchildren.
Well, I'm sure you've been a great example. Hey, we're here with Dr. Stately and Native American Community Clinic President and CEO, and we'll be right back after this short break.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Hey, this is Robert Pilot. The Minnesota State Fair is more than food on a stick. It's a chance to celebrate Native culture and voices. On August 25th, hear the Red Lake Singers and Amizaska Drum Group during Mental Health Awareness at Dam Patch Park. On August 27th, meet Native authors like Roxanne B2B Nokwe Gold and Stacy Lola Drewyard, and visit the Common Table and learn how Indigenous foodways are shaping Minnesota's future. Get your State Fair tickets now at mnstatefair.org.
Registering with the Selective Service System is something every 18-year-old guy is required to do. That's the Selective Service, not the Secret Service. When you register with Selective Service, you won't be guarding the president. Nobody's going to give you sunglasses and a black suit. You know what happens when you register with Selective Service? You'll stay eligible for college loans, jobs, and training programs. If you're a guy turning 18, go to sss.gov and register. No, karate classes are not included.
Four Sisters Farmers Market is more than a place to shop for delicious organic food. It's a celebration of Indigenous culture, food sovereignty, and community. Now in its 11th season, the market offers healthy, affordable, culturally appropriate local foods every Thursday from 11 to 3. Located on the American Indian Cultural Corridor off Franklin Avenue, Four Sisters Farmers Market is a project of NACD. Every Thursday now through October, discover more about Four Sisters Farmers Market by visiting NACD.org.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, in this portion of the show, we like to bring awareness to our Minnesota and Wisconsin wolf population to say no to the wolves. Oh!
Oh!
No to the wolf hunt, I meant to say. Oh, we would say yes to the wolves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, you don't say no to the wolves.
Yeah, well.
Granny said no to the wolves. Look what happened to her.
Oh, gee. Wow. Yeah. That's heavy. That was heavy. Yeah, you know, we're here with Dr. Stately, CEO of Native American Community Clinic here in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities. And we always have an interesting conversation. And I think with the first guest, it kind of started out because we really talked about, you know, lateral oppression and also people's working and working for the good of the community and keeping an eye on the prize, basically. And that sometimes is hard to do.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, there's a lot to be distracted by out there. You know, there's a lot going on in the world, and there's a lot even going on in our community that can distract you, you know. I'm not going to lie. I like to watch I like to watch a good, funny or spicy TikTok or, you know, Instagram reel, you know, I can enjoy that. But, but I try not to do it for hours on end. In fact, I'm really, really bad at social media. People are always like, I left you a message on TikTok or I left you a message on Instagram or Facebook. Like a month ago, and you still haven't responded. I was like, well, yeah, I'm busy. So anyway. the people who really need to talk to me have my phone number.
Right. And then you have the choice to respond or not.
Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah. But I was like just thinking, like, you know, there's that we live in a world where like that certainly is a big, huge thing, right? It's like, you know, all the things that we can be distracted by. And it does pull our attention away from the things that matter a lot. But, you know, which is why we have elders, right? Which why we have, like, you know, elders like you.
A baby elder?
A baby elder. I don't know. You're not really a baby elder. Oh, are you going to be 64 soon?
65. May. Yeah. I already am 64. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you're gonna be 65 soon, right?
And you know, another year.
Behind. I'm on your hot on your heels. A couple years behind you.
On recovery too, which is funny.
Huh?
I say you're sober too, just a few years behind me too, which is
funny. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of strange, I guess. Did you get sober at 23, like I did?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah, I got sober at 23. And so I was telling somebody the other day, like why am I in my 60s? You're like, you don't look 60. I was like, well, you're used to looking at people who are, you know, ridden hard and put away wet.
Yeah.
I haven't done that in a really long time, so I can kind of pass. But but I think that's the thing is, like, I've been deep in this space because I'm going to give a talk tomorrow at this at an NIEA gathering. National Indian Education Association gathering. I've been asked to talk about my experience about growing up in Minneapolis. Mm. You know, during the 60s, 70s, the 80s, during the time when, you know, there was like this big, you know, when the big, huge renaissance was happening, the revival of the Native culture and language and history.
Survival schools
and things like that. And just like to talk about like what it was like to live here in this space and place and be a young person growing up and watching all of this unfold before me. Right. Mm-hmm. And how that sort of informs like my worldview of things and how, you know, and, you know, it was like, you know, I had to carve my own way too. I was born and raised in a community of like, you know, activists and, you know, mm-hmm. I had loud and angry aunties at the tables of my dinners and things like that long before there was Instagram and TikToks, right? Yeah. And so, you know, those are the things that shaped who I was most of my entire life because, you know, my mom and many of my extended family members, both men and women, were really deeply involved in, you know, the early shaping and the cultivating and the growing of American Indian movement. You know, the Belcourt brothers were my uncles through marriage and through, you know, I was involved in their lives. They lived, my uncle Les Belcourt and my aunt lived across the driveway from us for most of our lives. And I had, you know, Clyde and his, and Vernon's children were my cousins, and I spent lots of time with them. And Dennis and my aunt Jeanette had children, and I grew up with those. So I was like, I'm going through Dick Bancroft's book, and I'm reading about some of the stuff and trying to just kind of remember what I was like during that period of time and center my mind there. And I'm thinking about how, like, you know, when I was a little kid, I didn't really know what the hell they were up to. You know, they were just my uncles, and they were just, you know, and you know, Pat Bellinger and all these other people, they were just my aunties. They were just like, you know, people I would see regularly at my house. And
why does Clyde have a bullet hole in his chest?
I don't remember that, but you know, but yeah, holy, they just look just indigenous as F, you know, and I was also looking through like a you know, that Dick Bancroft book, We Are Still Here, which is, you know, his photo history of the following Indian American Indian movement. And I saw a picture of my sister's husband, Gabriel Horn. He was my teacher in high school for English and a couple of other classes, but he was also a teacher at the Red Schoolhouse, which I ended up working at later in my life too. So,
wow.
It was like one of these. So it was just like, I was going down this memory lane about like my early childhood and my early adolescence here in Minneapolis and how all that shaped who I was. You know, I moved away from here when I was 23 years old and lived on the West Coast for, you know, 18 years before I came back, or 19 years before I came back. Wow. And I come back and the place is a lot different, but it's also same. Same in the sense that, like, you know, we have all these things that are going on in our community. We have like this huge plethora of organizations and people and movements happening within our community you know, have sprung forth of like from that primordial ooze that our ancestors in a generation or two have given right here in Minneapolis. It's like, this is a place of innovation and indigenous resistance. And like, that's baked into my blood. That's like baked into my DNA. And so it's just a really wonderful place to be. I'm really proud that I'm really happy I came home, and I'm raising my kids here in this space, because I want them to understand how important it is to continue that work long into the future.
It's so interesting, and that's what Rachel and I were talking about in the beginning of the show too. Yeah, and geez, you know, all the bars are gone from Franklin Avenue, but we still have. Yeah. I mean, that was.
Who would have thought that would have ever happened, right? You know, exactly. I went to every one of those bars actually with a fake ID, I might add.
I think I got beat up in one of those bars, but that's a whole different story. But I was kind of mouthy. I know it's hard to believe. Hey, we only got 30 seconds left. Dr. Stately, a big peeny geeky, thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, as always, it's always a pleasure here at Native Roots Radio, and people look forward to hearing from you. So thank you so much.
You take care.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
Pat Kreitlow. On Tuesday, we'll have Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander, Chad Holmes from our Civic Media Station in Wausau, and our Way Up North segment from Ashland.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
One of the most basic things that a free people could want, not going bankrupt because of healthcare. If it sounds like I'm banging my head against the microphone, it's that we are having this discussion about having to hold benefits for people because they didn't have proper health insurance coverage, because they're threatened with bankruptcy, which again happens in no other developed country in the world.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
as Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief, outside the governor's mansion in Austin, Texas.
Texas democracy under attack. What do we do?
Protests over a plan by Republicans in the Texas House of Representatives to change the congressional district map to send more Republicans to the U.S. House. Officials in California are reportedly considering a new district map that could win five more U.S. House seats for Democrats. Governor Gavin Newsom.
Whatever they are doing will be neutered here in the state of California. And they will pay that price. And we believe public opinion is with our approach.
Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem says the ICE detention facility known as Alligator Alcatraz could be the model for other detention centers across the country. CBS's Nicole Skanga was on an overseas trip with Noem.
Secretary Noem told me they're already considering facilities in Nebraska, in Louisiana, and in Arizona.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.